Episode 222. Don't fact check me because I actually have no idea. I am Elijah. I'm joined alongside the co-host with the most, who doesn't like to boast, who doesn't eat a Sunday
avocado on toast.
Oh yeah, there we go. There's another one. Josh, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. It's a wild week already. It's a wild week.
Good. It's about to be wilder because we're about to do a little Newcastle podcast. This one might be shorter, might be longer. I think it actually will be kind of short because we don't have a preview. But also the longest parts of the podcast are our review, so that doesn't really hold weight. But we should be good. It's international break, so you'll get actually not even a real break in the podcast because we'll be back next week. But I don't know. Yeah, international break, Josh's favorite time of the year. It's already, I think this is already the third international break, which is nuts. That feels a bit much.
Just bang my head on a desk. The only reason I do appreciate them is because it allows our players to get healthy.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's also a risk for other players to get hurt. So
yeah, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't. All right. Be sure to subscribe to us on all of the platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts is dying. So if you use Google Podcasts, go ahead and get set up in YouTube Music. Stitcher's dead. I don't know. Podcasts might be dead. Who knows? And follow us on the socials. Nothing crazy. You know where to find us if you're a listener. And if you don't, then type in Coming Home Newcastle on Twitter and you'll find it. All right. Without further ado, let's hop right into it. Josh, can you give us a fast fantasy update for us?
Yeah, let's do a fast fantasy update. 1, 2, 3. My Magic Mags is in first place. That's me. I got 53 points on the weekend. 534 points total. This is my best year ever. It's just coincidentally the first time I've ever shared it publicly with people. Number two is Schmeichel Jackson. He had 67 points and 482 points total. Comeback Karius is holding in third. He had only a 43-point weekend. He's on total of 480 points. The biggest weeks were UEFA Bundesliga with 72 points up to 18th. Schmeichel Jackson, the aforementioned, 67 points up to second. And Lord Isak Pensak, 65 points up to sixth place. You only gained 42 points, and you're stuck at 33 with no movement in the table. I asterisked that there were 12 performances worse than yours, so just keep showing up. You'll climb up the table. And then here's my fantasy hint. Don't touch your squad for a week. Keep your eye on the injuries during the international break. And then the day before, once we know all the training is done and the international breaks are over, kind of evaluate how many injuries and suspensions you have in your team, and you can use the free hit. And so some people who haven't played a lot of fantasy will see free hit up there and not sure what it does. And it allows you to make unlimited transfers for 1 week. You still have to stay within budget. So the way I used it was I literally transferred out every single player. And then knew how I wanted to set it up, and then brought in like the cheapest defenders, two of the cheapest defenders, and you know, spent the rest of it on my squad. So, and then it reverts the week later, like as soon as the match week is over, it reverts to whatever it was before you made all those changes. So you sort of get a way to, if you have a bunch of injuries and suspensions, it's a way to sort of like take a free week off and just kind of reset, and you can consider how those players worked out and then go back to normal transfers.
Bet. Bet. All right. And then the women's team. Kind of some exciting news came out today that Josh has been asking for forever. And let him break the news and also talk about the women's team's performance last week.
Yeah. So Newcastle United women on Sunday, October 8th, the Lasses went away to Liverpool Feds and won 4-0 with a 34th minute opener from Casey Elson. And then they led 1-0 at the half. They came back in the second half. Emma Kelly got a 46th minute goal, so immediately opening the half with a goal. And then Bridget Galloway got a second half brace with a goal in the 60th and 71st. Newcastle stay fourth in the table despite being the only perfect team remaining in the table. But they only have 4 games played, and some teams have 5, 6, or even 7 games already played, so 3 matches in hand. Not a bad way to start the season. They play against first place Burnley at Kingston Park on Sunday, October 15th, and you can watch on YouTube. They announced that today, and you shared it with me, so you kind of broke it to me that it'll be on YouTube. 6 a.m. Pacific in U.S. time, 9 a.m. Eastern U.S. time. And wherever you are in between, you can work that out.
Yeah, I will not be watching this live because it'll be 6 in the morning. So, sorry.
I've done worse. I've been up at 4:30 in the morning to watch the men lose an absolute stinker. So I'll be up for this.
I probably will be up for this because I actually wake up at 6 in the morning.
Yeah, I'll be making some coffee and some bacon and having some breakfast, and
I will not be doing all of that. My breakfasts are not as complex. Actually, I might make bacon. I have bacon now. All right, that's not important. Okay, all right. Next up on the docket, Bruno signed a new 5-year extension with Newcastle. We didn't really talk about this last week when it was announced, but shout out to him.
Was it finalized?
Yeah, it was announced by the club. I guess, what was that, the 7th, which I think was last Friday, have been last Friday. Completely announced from the club, all that kind of jazz, or that might have been last Saturday. But, it's good for him. It's a great move for the club, obviously, for some much-needed security, as he has been linked to the likes of Real Madrid and some of the other bigger clubs, or some of the biggest clubs in the world, so... Just good on him. He seems like he wants to stay here and be a part of this project, all that good stuff. He says all the right things. I don't know if you have any additional thoughts, but I mean, yeah, shout out to Bruno.
100 million. $100 million release clause, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just reported, and it's like the club website's never going to say.
No, I think I saw... that there was $100 million or €100 million or pound, whatever, money. So it would take a large amount of money for a team to pry him from Newcastle United. And I think that if that is the case, let's just say Real Madrid does come in for Bruno and they evaluate him at 100 plus and they say, we'll give you that 100. That will be short one Bruno Guimarães. But we'll have enough money to buy 2 or 3 players that can add to the squad, right? And give it a couple of years, and I you know, maybe not this year, maybe next summer.
We'll see. Who knows? I'm just saying that we haven't seen everyone. That's a rumor, and it's Fabrizio who said it, but literally nobody has confirmed it besides him, and he didn't even confirm it on the initial. Like he just like said it a bunch during the negotiations. I don't think he actually ever like confirmed it when it was announced. We'll see. 100 million pound release clause is what it is. But the most important thing is that he is here to stay at least for the next season or two. The other big news was recently announced the Euro 2028 venues. There were some notable stadiums left off of this. It's like a joint hosting of the Euro 2028 tournament, I guess, with the UK and Ireland. And Newcastle's St. James's Park was announced as one of the venues. So St. James's will be hosting Euro games, which would be pretty cool. There's also some other interesting names on there, including some new stadiums that are slated to be built by then and some iconic grounds all around England. You can find, I don't know, you can find all that stuff anywhere you want. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if this really affects us because I mean, we'll see. I don't know if either one of us cares about the Euros enough to go to St. James's for this. But
the Euros, I think, are more entertaining than the World Cup, to be honest with you. I feel like
it's I agree with that, but you don't like international soccer.
For reasons that it's to the standard of play, interruption of club football. But the Euros, I do tend to pay a little bit more attention to just because it's a higher level of play. And and the Euros final doesn't interrupt club football because it takes place after the seasons are over, because it's the European seasons mostly are unified. I think Norwegian leagues, maybe I think the Irish league is off a little bit, but other than that,
I mean, sure. I think Euros are fine. I think it is a perfectly fine tournament, but I still think that the CONCACAF Gold Cup is the pinnacle for all international tournaments. So
you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, like, I don't know, African Cup of Nations is also like AFCON sick because it's just fun. But yeah, anyway, St. James's will be hosting that. Hopefully I'm saying it right. I feel like I always mess up the pronunciation. And then the other kind of slight news is, like, we'll just quickly go through Newcastle. I have a few guys who are out on international break. I'm not going to go through all the youth guys, but there's a couple of youth guys that called up to the U17s. Sandro Tonali, of course, has been named to the Italy squad. Fabian Scher got a call up. Alexander Isak also got called up. I did see some rumors floating around that he could be leaving the Swedish camp early just to, like, kind of protect himself if he picked up a knock or something during the last game. Kieran Trippier was the only English player called up. It sparked some debate about whether or not Dan Burn should be called up, which is something I saw, and Sean Longstaff. So that's also interesting. Miguel Almiron, of course, got called up. Bruno got called up. Martin Dubravka got called up. And Tino Livramento is making his first appearance for the U21s for England. And Lewis Hall got called up as well. Everyone else is just kind of below that U20 mark. But, yeah, that's all I got for international break stuff. We might as well get into the match.
Mm.
Yeah, so Newcastle, of course, drew away 2-2 at West Ham, as you should know by now. Exciting match, I would say. Interesting one if you were neutral, because it kind of felt like it was a bit back and forth for a little bit. There was definitely some Newcastle control. There was a little bit of West Ham looking pretty solid as well. But all in all, a pretty well-played, somewhat fair result, you could argue. We'll get into it with some three words. I'll start with what a couple fans said, and then, well, I know Josh wrote some down as well. So in UFC Indiana, Eric Schmidt says, Slim Reaper Brace. Kim Avery says, draw Castle United returns. And CDG says, it's about mentality. What do you got, Josh?
My question is, what was predicted, which is also three words, got robbed away? Or take a point?
Yeah. Are you asking what was predicted, or are you saying that's what was predicted?
Well, both. We make our predictions, then we forget to write them down. So I'm wondering if I predicted 2-2. I think I did.
I feel like you did. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely don't write any of these down. We like very confidently the next episode say this is what we predicted.
Oh, yes. I knew exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah, so we just did that again where we don't actually know what we predicted, but we're just going with the assumption that Josh was right and it was a 2-2 draw. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, overall pretty fair result. You can argue about the manner in which all the goals were scored, but it did feel like both teams executed the game plans they wanted to execute. Yeah. And there's not a huge gap in quality between the teams, especially with both teams having to rotate guys in. It was a fair match. I don't know. I mean, I really don't have many opinions about this match.
It's a draw away from home.
Yeah, two similar sides that are trying to do the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
And they're in Europe and they have a European title from last year, right? So
yeah.
And they're actually above us in the table and playing pretty good soccer this year. So it wouldn't surprise that it was I think that maybe if a team wears claret and blue, we're like, maybe we should beat them. But I think that they're doing, I think David Moyes has them playing pretty good football. And I think that was a fair result based on, as you say, you know, two different game plans that sort of ended up in a draw.
Yeah, I think probably the only knock on this Moyes side is that it did feel like West Ham was willing to soak up a lot of pressure. And you look at some of the names that they have in the team, like Paqueta and Jared Bowen and James Ward-Prowse and Souček, and you're like, you kind of wish they were a bit more attacking at times.
Yeah.
They have solid fullbacks in Kufal and Emerson as well. So that's probably like the only annoying part about this is that it was an exciting game, but it does feel like this team could be even better, if that makes sense. But it could be them, you know, also just giving Newcastle that layer of respect as well. So real quick, we'll go through the lineups. On the Newcastle side, we had Nick Pope in goal with Dan Burn, Fabian Scher, and Jamal Lascelles, as well as Kieran Trippier in the back line. Lascelles with the captain's armband there. Scher plays the left-sided center back. In the midfield, Sandro Tonali with actually one of his better performances of the season with Bruno Guimaraes and Sean Longstaff. And then up top, we had Elliot Anderson, Alexander Isak, and Miguel Almiron. And for the West Ham side, they had the nipple man, Alphonse Areola in goal. and they had Kufal as one of their fullbacks with the cat kicker. And Aguirre as their center backs, with Emerson as the other fullback. James Ward-Prowse and Edson Alvarez were in the midfield with them, with Jared Bowen, Souček, Paqueta, and Antonio kind of filling out the attacking talent there. Nothing crazy for Newcastle, just some guys off the bench. Jacob Murphy made an appearance, Callum Wilson made an appearance, Matt Target made an appearance. All pretty late, all subs for both sides really happening after the 75th minute. So both teams kind of just left it all out there, probably due to just knowing that, you know, you can keep your – I mean, one, both benches were kind of light. That's probably the most important thing is that there was, you know, there were some injuries, not a lot of great talent off the bench. I mean, West Ham could have brought some other guys off the bench, but they chose not to. But – at the end of the day, the other big thing is, like we kind of mentioned earlier, it's international break, so you know you're going to get that extra bit of rest as well. A couple days off and then back to the training ground, so you don't feel as bad playing guys longer. We've seen that in the past from Eddie Howe teams as well. Real quick, let's talk about just the goals, and then we'll just give our general thoughts, all that kind of jazz. Started off with a very interesting goal, which involved a comedy of errors and mistakes, kind of similar to what we saw, I want to say, early on in the season from Newcastle, where just some mistakes at the back. Paqueta played a ball over the top for Emerson, and Emerson found Souček, who beat Nick Pope, who had no idea what Nick Pope was doing in that moment, but It was a bunch of errors that led to West Ham leading early on in the 8th minute. So shout out to them, I guess. I don't really know if and it was very interesting because Newcastle were pretty dominant going forward for the first 20 minutes. And that was kind of the one moment where West Ham had life and they took advantage of it and they scored. But even when Newcastle went behind, they still kind of regained control of the match and looked like for the first half that they were a threat to score at times.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have anything to add.
Oh, I didn't know if you were taking a break. You were so quiet. I thought that you had dropped.
Oh, no. I was literally just like, yeah, that's it. They scored. And then nothing else really happened in the first half.
Yeah.
Miguel Almiron had a shot where he hit it over the goal, but nothing crazy.
No, I think I was watching sort of, as I mentioned, standard of play when speaking about the Euros. I was sort of watching the standard of play in this. And there was I felt like there was a bit of a drop-off. And I know, like, they looked dangerous and they had their moments. But when they weren't, I didn't feel that they were moving at full speed. I felt like they were moving just fast enough. If that makes sense, I don't know.
In the first half, for sure. I think we can kind of talk about how they came out in the second. But in the first half, it definitely felt like there were some tired legs and they were kind of just sleepwalking over to the break while still maintaining possession. And part of that was like West Ham were happy to just clog the middle of the pitch. And like there was not a lot Newcastle could do to find space when they had the ball in the final third. There was even moments where the last 15 or so minutes of the first half, Alexander Isak was playing out wide and Elliot Anderson was playing like through the middle. And it looked like it was being set up that for Isak to kind of just remain out wide. That was kind of the only thing that was kind of working was he was out wide, but he would cross the ball in and there's no one there because, again, there's no other strikers on the pitch. So no one's really making the proper runs and all that kind of jazz. And Elliot Anderson's dropping a little bit too deep. So it was just kind of a mess. And again, there's really not much you could do when like West Ham have 10 behind the ball. Like it's just, it was tough. So, yeah. I mean, you know,
I would say also there was, I think something that I was thinking about while watching this as well was when we looked at the statistics and you'll probably get to the final statistics, but basically like we dominated possession. Right. And that's, part of the thing that makes Newcastle so dangerous is being able to press a team. Mm-hmm. And they just let us have the ball instead of allowing us to press them. They just was like, well, here you have it. Right. In a way that like, okay, well, if we can't press to create mistakes in our attacking third and their defensive zones, like if we can't create those errors and create chaos and score off of that, like then we have to build it up and organize it. And I think that we were missing the organizers, but we were also missing like Gordon, right? Who can create chaos out of nothing, but also can be part of a build up play. Like he's just been, I was wrong about him and I'll say it all year. I mean, like I just didn't think that he'd be what he is to Newcastle. He's essential. Yeah. And I also like, I feel like, it's a shame that Harvey Barnes got injured. It would have been no matter what. Like, it's a shame. But, like, it would have been the perfect game for him to sort of showcase his talent with Gordon out, for sure. This would have been the game for him. So, hopefully we get all our pieces back soon.
Yeah. I mean, and to that point, though, I mean, the creator was Alexander Isak. I think it was just figuring out the best way to utilize him and unlock him. Him and Tonali had pretty solid first halves, but they were creating chances for non-existent players. They were creating chances, and no one was on the end of any of their chances. Or it was just a West Ham player was there because they had, you know, 10 guys in the box. But all that to say, we mentioned, it did feel once Isak moved out wide that maybe Elliot Anderson was going to get subbed off at halftime for Callum Wilson, who is a noted West Ham killer. But that didn't happen. What ended up happening as well is instead was Alexander Isak scored. It was a free kick that Isak pounced on after a deflection off of Edson Álvarez, and he scores. There was a possible offside that VAR checked, and it was ruled that it was fine. And then literally not even 5 minutes after, I mean, it was literally like a minute after the VAR check. It was a gorgeous ball from Kieran Trippier, who, if you don't have him in fantasy, I have no idea what to tell you. It was like a volleyed pass that found Isak, and Isak just, I mean, he basically, I mean, he's right in front of goal at that point, turns, shoots, goal. And Newcastle, out of nowhere, not even out of nowhere, kind of, this felt it kind of had a deserved 2-1 lead And then they went into protect mode. And we'll talk about the other goals in a second, but I just want to get through the rest of this. Went into protect mode. Isak actually nearly had a hat trick. He hit the post right after that in like the 72nd or 73rd minute. And then eventually we had some subs come on to kind of help protect the lead. Callum Wilson as a kind of a last ditch. Maybe he gets some opportunity as we start to hoof the ball forward and clear it. Matt Target came on later on, but not after Kudus came on. Mohamed Kudus, I think it's at Ajax before, I want to say.
Yes.
Yeah. 23-year-old attacking player, really talented guy. He had a strike from outside the box and scored, and it became 2-2. And then Newcastle kind of, at that point, it was the 89th minute, conceded the fact that it was going to likely be a draw, subbed off Elliot Anderson in favor of Matt Target, and kind of saw the game out from there. But yeah, that's kind of how it ended. A quick turn from the first half. Like we kind of said, they came out with a little more energy, and then Isak was the kind of the catalyst there, took advantage of the additional energy and effort from Newcastle and ability to pounce on some of these loose balls. And he did the damn thing, and he's up to 7 goals this season. So, Josh, I don't know if you have any thoughts on the Isak goals, the Kudus goal. The floor is yours to speak on.
Yeah, Isak, that goal, let's note that I believe that Trippier, his cross back in, he received that on the full volley, right? So he came in and full volleyed.
I said it was volleyed cross, yeah.
Yeah, and then volleyed in. Like, I don't think it touched the ground, like that whole phase of play there. So that was brilliant. It was a lovely goal, really was. And I think that there was a definitely change in maybe the way that they attacked, a little bit more downhill than build up, which is good. And maybe that's because West Ham maybe tried to open up a little bit and chase the result. And maybe that's why it seemed different. There were definitely some missed opportunities for both sides. And I think especially at the very end, we're lucky not to have lost the game, to be honest with you. West Ham almost scored a winner. But on the other, we're also really lucky not to have lost Bruno, who, you know, by all accounts, you know, should have had a double yellow, and, you know, and he didn't. So, you know, we're lucky to get away with a point, I think, from a performance that isn't. Oh, if you went back and you looked at all the results, like from the last 3 weeks or whatever, that's not our best. And that's not our best performance. And to get a point out of that and still be unbeaten is, I think that's actually really, I'll take that. I'll snatch that, go into an international break, get some bodies back and reset.
Yeah. I mean, I think the other thing is that, like, this is still, like we said, you know, on paper, it's still a good result. It's a draw away from home against a team that's fighting for a European spot. So, you know, it's not what you want, but it is also not the worst thing in the world to draw away from home against a very good team in West Ham. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Shout out to them. Is there anything that stuck out to you, any players that stuck out to you that you want to give a shout out to?
Maybe Tonali. I think that might have been – I think – it was a good performance on his behalf, and I wouldn't say that he's been poor. I mean, his very first game was like a shock, right? And prior to that first game, I had even said, "Look, don't be surprised. This guy's a world class player, but it might take him a little while to get set into the system." And then he came out that first game, and everyone was like, "Oh, man, like he doesn't need time at all." And then he's actually, I think he's regressed a little bit, and we see really good moments, and he's a really, you know, he's a really great, obviously world class player. But just, you know, it just takes a while to make, to be consistent with good performances and standout performances. And so this was a good performance, not necessarily a standout performance, but I can see improvements. Obviously Isak like should get the plaudits for, I think he missed a goal, but like, so what, right? He got a brace. He got us into this game. Mm-hmm. He made a lot happen. And
I mean, he hit the post, like, so.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like he completely missed the goal.
Fluffed a sitter, right. Yeah, yeah, it wasn't, I mean, a travesty or anything.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I mean, it is what
exactly. I just thought there's a few good performances. I just really feel like we're still missing some elements. It's been, between international breaks, it's been a really long stretch, a great run of results for Newcastle, and I keep saying this, but man, like a welcome break.
Yeah. And I it's worth noting that, like, you know, I don't know if Tonali's like regressed really, or if just, I think we have to remember that the first match of the season against West Ham, I'm not saying
Aston Villa?
West Ham, but you got the claret and blue.
They all look the same.
But the first match against Aston Villa, that was easily their worst performance of the season. And not to take away anything from Newcastle, but Newcastle have only really replicated a match like that once the rest of the season. So it's worth mentioning there. But also, like, you got to remember Aston Villa had a little bit of uncertainty on how they were going to play coming into the season, still were making some moves on the transfer market. It was still fairly new for everyone involved. And Tyrone Mings, who, even though he's not, you know, in my opinion, not the best defender, he is the heart and soul of that team, and he did get subbed off, and the game changed. Like, that was the one of the game changing moments. Was Newcastle looked really good, but then they started flat out dominating after that. And yes, Tonali looked great, but he's definitely very comfortable, and we saw flaws in that system that weren't exposed because of what Aston Villa were doing in that match and how they chose to play and their kind of stubbornness. They played kind of right into Newcastle's, you know, game plan. Like, we saw a lot that led to everyone in Newcastle looking really good in that match. But I do think Tonali's slowly but surely getting there. But I also think some of his, I don't want to call them issues, but some of the stuff that he's been dealing with has nothing to do with him as a player, but also just Newcastle figuring out what they want to do system-wise. Because let's be honest, the midfield until recently hasn't looked that good overall. Tonali or not, I mean, it doesn't matter who's in there, there's still this lack of balance. And part of that is not having Joel Linton, part of that's not having Joe Willock. But I still think Newcastle were searching for that balance. Bringing in Sean Longstaff on a more permanent basis in the midfield has started to help, because he kind of really knows his particular role and how he wants to play, and how he should be playing better than, you know, a lot of the other guys. But that's the midfield as a whole has been something that has been a constant, like, improvement plan situation for Newcastle.
Yeah, agreed. I don't know if it's, and I don't think that it's a matter of adding pieces to it. You know, I'm not desperately looking forward to January waiting to fix the midfield. I think all the pieces that we need for midfield are here.
Yeah, it's fit and on, like, figuring out where everyone fits and how to get the most out of the pieces we have, because there's genuine talent there. I think Joel Linton has proved that he's going to be a solid player going forward, and I think everyone believes in Joe Willock's growth and continued development, and we know how talented Bruno and Tonali are, and I think we're pleasantly surprised with Sean Longstaff, and I think everyone knows that at a minimum Sean Longstaff is a solid starting quality midfielder in the Prem. So it's really just about finding that balance and figuring out where everyone fits within the system.
Yeah. It'll be good to have Botman back too. I think that maybe was a missing piece from the West Ham game. So without pointing fingers at the reason why certain goals were capitulated, maybe just having his presence there, it would have been more organized. You know, there would have been some more organization to it. Not sure. But
I mean, yeah. Sure.
The result is the result, right?
I have no idea how much English Botman speaks, but he does cover for a lot of people.
He does cover a lot of ground, yeah.
Well, cool. There's literally nothing else to talk about, so. we'll be back next week. We'll preview Newcastle's next match. But for now, I mean, that's pretty much it. Enjoy the international break. Enjoy watching your respective teams, or not watching your teams. maybe watching baseball or basketball or literally anything else during this time period. MLS is back. Well, it's been back, but it's about to be playoffs for MLS, so maybe tune into that. I don't know.
Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
Messi's not in. Yeah, Messi's not in the playoffs, so apparently.
Yeah, and apparently if you ask the writers of The Athletic, that's like the worst case scenario for MLS, which is...
Yeah.
I don't know. This is a quick MLS aside, because I know there's... I know for a fact we have some listeners who had their opinions on it.
Yeah.
I think that was definitely a case of The Athletic and their social team, like, taking part of what someone said in a newsletter and making that the main headline. Yes. When, like, the meat of what they were saying is, like...
It wasn't not the lead.
It was just... Yeah, I mean, the meat of what they're saying... Like, again, the headline of, like, oh, MLS, like Messi missing the MLS playoffs is, like bad for MLS. That's kind of the point they were making, but not for the reason of, like, because Messi's not in. It's just, like, Messi's really good, and the quality of play, like, it's just watching Miami with Messi was going to be a better matchup than some of these, like, really, like, not so good Eastern Conference teams that got into the playoffs. And I don't disagree with that sentiment. Is that
no? It
like,
it makes
Miami
sense,
with Messi,
like,
and Busquets, they looked better than, like, I don't know, some of Miami, the bottom half. Yeah.
Miami before Messi. Miami was it's a garbage team, and it was bottom of the table when he got there, and that's why Messi didn't make it to the playoffs. Not because Messi's over the hill, or they're not going to give it to him because they need him in there. Like, the team wasn't good enough, and that sort of.
But and even with the team not being good enough, like, the team with Messi is still better than some of the teams that are in the playoffs, which is like part of, which is one of the main points of that article. And the other part of that is just, like, literally, like, viewership wise, like. And they were looking at it from the league perspective, is that, and I think people just got offended because they like to be offended, but, like, all these leagues are out to make money, and, like, by and large, the league would have wanted Messi in the playoffs because that's just going to make them more money, which, again, you know, that's, if you don't like that, that's fair, and that's all, but I mean, I don't know if that's the grounds for attacking the article for reporting, like, the most obvious thing in the world. And if people were, like, really upset about it, I was like, I know MLS execs are not happy that Messi's in the playoffs. Like, that's obvious.
The worst part of all of this, my friend, is that DeAndre Yedlin is also not in the playoffs. And that's a shame.
That's facts. But the best part is that Atlanta United are in the playoffs. So, and well, Wayne Rooney is not in MLS anymore. That's a whole nother conversation. Are you hip on that, Josh?
Yeah, he left.
Well, yeah, right? But are you hip on the other part about Birmingham City, that part of it?
That he went to Birmingham City even though they were, fourth in the table?
Yeah, they're fourth in the table. They fired their manager, and basically because Rooney's available. And, I mean, the English people are not happy about it. But I don't know. I don't really have an opinion on it.
Oh, it's interesting. Yeah.
It is interesting. It's like... Rooney was a fine championship manager. I think he was at Derby, and they had
holding
the
it together
reduction.
With, like, rubber bands and masking tape and his toothpicks and holding the whole thing together. So they were, I was surprised though because wasn't that his second stint at DC United?
Yeah.
Yeah. You think he'll be back for a third one when Birmingham doesn't work out?
No, because the ownership has not changed. So,
no,
that's probably the big issue. Well, I don't know. They seem. I mean, this is getting ridiculous. So I'm going to end the podcast after this. But there's some rumors about who they're thinking of hiring for their GM spot, and they're at least looking at GMs from good organizations. So that's a step in the right direction for DC United. But wow, we just spent 5 minutes talking about MLS and have lost.
That's fine.
We've lost our entire audience.
No, they just stopped listening for the last 2 minutes. That's okay.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, that's been another episode of CHN Radio. I'm Elijah. That's Josh. Away the lads. Love you guys. Like sitting inside a fridge, but I wish I was on the quayside, looking at the old time bridge. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail.
not walk the streets all day. I'll meet for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park if the Gallagher tend in the rain. I'm coming home. And I'm proud to be a Geordie and to live in Geordie land. Some people think we're bawdy and we're hard to understand, and they say it's just self-pity and we're not so very tough, 'cause the people in the big fat city haven't had it tough as rough. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wing. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll meet for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hinny, how are you?" I'm coming home. The old blind busker who stands at Fenwick's door. He plays a mean accordion, you've all seen him there before. And I love the Geordie heroes, there's so many famous names like Lindisfarne in Gaza, Brendan Foster in the Gates at Games. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming home, Newcastle. If you never win the cup again, I'll brave the dark at St. James's Park at the Gallagher's End in the rain. I'm coming home, Newcastle. You can keep your London wine. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of the River Tyne. I'm coming home, Newcastle. I wish I'd never been away. I'd kiss the ground for the welcome sound of me mother saying, "Hinny, how are you?" I'm coming home, Newcastle. I might as well have been in jail. I'd walk the streets all day. I'll need for a bottle of your own brown ale. I'm coming